With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Monday. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Good weekend, boys.
Excellent.
I like that. That's what I like to hear. We all got a little sun. We are starting the week off strong. Russell Westbrook might have to give up his point guard duties. Steph Curry's got his eyes set on a fourth title. We are going to start, though, this morning with one Anthony Davis, the Brow, officially announced as a Laker at his introductory press conference on Saturday. And when you pair a former number one pick and six-time All-Star in Anthony Davis next to arguably the best player of all time in LeBron James, you'd think the rest of the roster would just fall into place. But there was no falling here. The Lakers strategically built a talented team around the two stars. And if you ask Anthony Davis, he'll tell you it's a pretty unstoppable team, too.
I like our roster. I like, you know, every player that we have, you know, from 1 through 15. 1 through 14. So I'm excited about it, and you know, I'll put our roster up against anybody. I feel like that, you know, in a seven-game series that we'll come out victorious.
See, we'll start with you. Do you agree with Anthony Davis? Would you put this Laker roster up against anyone else's in the NBA?
Well, to be fair with Anthony Davis, the one thing that he's probably looking at is there's a couple players, Rondo and Boogie Cousins, who he started with when they were in New Orleans. He thought they had a good opportunity. He wanted to bring Boogie Cousins back when Boogie Cousins' contract was up because he felt good about the way, especially to both of them. Both of them had spectacular seasons together. So if you look at if Rondo was happened to be a starter, so now I have what I had in New Orleans, plus LeBron, plus Kuz, and some of these other veterans coming off the bench, I could see why he'd think this is definitely the best roster he's ever been on. So I could understand that. LeBron's playoff experience, LeBron's championship experience being with the Lakers, I could understand that. But the thing is, we're not going to know about this till the end of the season because just like we crowned Toronto world champ, we didn't know that they were going to buy in. We didn't know they were going to have Gasol trading him late and he was going to be so effective. We didn't know. Serge Ibaka, you know something? He wants to be a starter. Will he buy into coming off the bench? Oh, he did it. And he did it well, providing leadership for them too with that second unit. So they have an opportunity, but this is about winning games, about championship. It's not about who's the best on paper. And they're going to have to get a number of veteran players to buy in to the team concept and what is best for the Lakers. Then they have the chance to fight for a championship. And whoever wins the championship is the best team. They're not giving out no paper champs for, who's the best team on paper.
And when Anthony Davis says 1 through 14, the best roster is not determined by 1 through 14. It's really 1 through 8, sometimes 1 through 7. Because in the playoffs, that's as many guys as you're going to play real minutes. And to Chris's point, once you get past the top six guys, guys 7, sometimes guys 7 and 8, are guys that are not currently on the roster. Marc Gasol was one of the four most important Raptors. He was not on the roster at the beginning of the year. We know the Lakers, while they might not be able to make a midseason trade, they will be active in the buyout market, whether it's Kyle Korver, Andre Iguodala, or someone we haven't discussed. So when I think about the Lakers roster, it's how do their top six guys that are on the roster right now compare to the other best teams in the West? So the Lakers' top six guys, regardless of position, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, Boogie Cousins, Avery Bradley. That's not talking about Rondo. That's not talking about KCP.
I like
just
that.
Their top six. So the top six for the Clippers, Kawhi, Paul George, Lou Williams, Pat Beverly, Montrezl Harrell, Mo Harkless. Yeah, you can make an argument defensively for the Clippers. I think offensively the Lakers seem to be the stronger unit. What about the Rockets, though? Harden, Russ, Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, Clint Capella, Austin Rivers. That's a team where if the Harden and Russ thing, that's a big if. fits, everyone else knows their role exactly. Philly has six strong guys. Now, their problem is they only have six strong guys. They desperately need to be involved in either the trade market or the buyout market. So I don't think right now there is a clear-cut best roster in the NBA. That's why it's the most wide open it's been, as you said, in 15 years. That's why Vegas doesn't have a clear favorite, because we don't have a Warriors. We don't even have a Cavs of a few years ago where it's like after the Warriors, the Cavs are clearly the best. There's, to me, five teams in the Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Sixers, and Bucks you can make a really strong case for. And then there's the Jazz and the Nuggets who are saying, don't forget about us. We really do go 10 people deep. So that's when you got a quarter of the league that I think if we did Family Feud style, you would get at least some votes for. That's where it's this wide open. But the Lakers roster, what it does have, if people know their roles, is, I believe, the most upside of any roster in basketball.
Because definitely Denver, Utah, they're going to play a more of a team concept.
Yes.
And you know those teams are going to buy in. Portland, on the outside of that, they're going to have big buy-in from their roster because of their leadership there. So I thought you brought up some great points as far as who's going to buy in. And the rest of that roster might not in the playoffs, but it will help you get through an 82-game schedule.
Well, that rest of the roster, just real quick, that is why even if you don't have Denver or Utah, teams such as those winning the title, those teams are going to be the most likely to have the path to the title go through their stadiums. Because while I'm only worried about 1 through 7.5 for the playoffs, through the regular season, it really is 1 through 11 or 12. And those teams that have legitimate, viable rotation players as an entire second unit, that's how the Raptors last year went 17-5 in the games without Kawhi Leonard, because they had the depth, and that's how they made sure they started out at home in every playoff series they played except for the one against the Bucks.
So you guys both echoed the same thing. Know your roles exactly to be successful on this team and buy into what's best for the team as opposed to what's best for you. But then, and this is something we'll get into a little bit later, we talk about, well, is it best for the team for a guy like Anthony Davis to play the 4 or 5? Is it best for LeBron James to play the point guard? Or is it what's best for the specific player? I think you have a little bit of a difference there. What's best for the team and what's best for the player? How do you make all of that work?
Well, Anthony Davis, for the people in L.A. who've never interviewed him, this is not anything new. And when people were saying, oh, he should play the 5, I had told you. He's always said, I don't want to play the 5. I don't want to be a 5. I don't want to be categorized as a 5. So to me, that's not new information.
But what if that's best for the team?
What's best for that player when you trade for him is what's best for that player is most important.
Okay.
When he came to the Lakers, they traded all those assets. Now, he will play a 5 role when, because there was some time they'll have units out there. But he has been on record. Why would you trade for someone that said, hey, I don't want to do this, and then you're getting ready to force them to do it? That doesn't make sense. That's not the star type of treatment. They should build a team around him with the respect what he's gone on record as saying a number of years ago.
And it's not ideal as far as if you were just building this team from 20,000 feet that Anthony Davis is probably only going to finish games as the 5 as opposed to start and finish games at the 5. But Chris's point is correct in that this is not new information. The Lakers knew that, and it's something I think he is, in today's NBA, I think he would be the most devastating stretch 5 we've ever seen. But he only wants to do that in very select roles, in spot minutes, similar to what
LeBron
I would say.
LeBron should play in the post. Yeah. I've been saying that for years. But he won't play in the post. Why? Because he doesn't want to.
The best lineup for the Lakers is honestly probably Anthony Davis at the 5 and LeBron at the 4. And that might be how they close. They might close with LeBron being the second biggest person on the court, Kuzma 3rd, and then a couple of shooters with Anthony Davis as the 5. But it's not the position, even if it's the position I think they're best served with him playing, especially given their roster, let you have Boogie come off the bench, run that second unit. There's a lot of reasons for it. But if you, the guy who you are building the future of your franchise around,
if that's not what he wants to play.
He doesn't want to. And it's not like he's not effective as a 4.
Right.
He's wildly effective as a 4. I just think in today's NBA, he'd be best as a 5, but he don't want to do it. Hey, this is Nick Wright from First Things First. And you have to check out this website, pristine.com. Pristine Auction has daily auctions with $1 starting bids. Authenticity is important to Pristine Auction. Pristine Auction guarantees authenticity, and it comes with authentication from the most trusted sources. Pristine Auctions are affordable. Most people don't think they can afford this stuff, but it's much more affordable than you think. A Dick Butkus signed Bears jersey sold for just $56, and a Mike Tyson autographed boxing glove sold for under $100. It's quick and free to register. Bidding is free, and you only pay if you win. Use registration code FTF when joining PRISTINE.com, and new users will receive a $5 auction credit. Again, you'll get a $5 auction credit when using registration code FTF to sign up for pristine.com. That's PRISTINE.com.
All right, moving on to Melvin Gordon now. Boy, he's coming off quite a year, right? The Chargers' two-time Pro Bowl running back had career highs in yards per carry, receiving yards, and touchdowns last season, all in just 12 games. Now he wants to be paid like a guy who did all those things. Gordon is in the fifth and final year of his rookie contract and is prepared to hold out, saying you can't just replace a great back. CeCe, how important is Melvin Gordon to the Chargers' success?
Well, Melvin Gordon, I would say his play has been inconsistent. The Chargers are one of the most talented rosters. Now, for an offense, it gives them a great deal of balance. But he hadn't played his best football. You know, barely last year, last season he averaged 5 yards a carry just to get to a career average of 4 yards a carry. So he hadn't put together the type of consistency that you want. Last season, only 9 runs of over 20 yards. So for me, you think Melvin Gordon, you think he's going to be a good receiver out of the backfield, which he is, also break off some big plays for you to build help out the offense. So to me, the Chargers, you have to be careful when you're a running back. Because, yes, they did pay L. Bell. Yes, Ty Gurley did get paid. Zeke's going to get paid. But around the league, there's still a theory. I can get a running back from off the street late in the draft. I can pick up an old veteran. Like, there's a lot of the league that still thinks that running back should be done by committee and don't believe in spending a lot of money on a running back, nor are spending high draft capital on them. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers didn't sign him to a long-term contract.
He has been very good when he's been out there, even if he hasn't been excellent. Like, the problem for last year, the reason he didn't have 1,000 yards is he missed 4 games. And a couple years prior to that, when he barely missed out on 1,000 yards, because he missed 3 games. The one full season he's played, 2017, he had 1,100 yards rushing and almost 500 yards receiving. One of his biggest talents is catching the ball out of the backfield. Over the last 3 years, averages about 50 catches and just under 500 yards receiving per season. And he's averaged 13 total touchdowns per season. But he is in this tough spot, which is the Chargers know he almost assuredly is not actually going to sit out and miss games. They can pay him this year $6 million, hold the franchise tag over him. And so he's in one of these positions where if a team pays him, It's not charity, but it's they don't have to. Like, they any extra money they give him would almost just to be nice. Now, if they really think he's going to miss games, then you can make the argument, man, Phillip Rivers, year 16. We've got a really good team. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams coming off a bit of a breakout second season with double-digit touchdowns. You'll have Hunter Henry back this year. This could be a dynamic offense if you have a running back like Melvin Gordon who can run and catch the ball. But my guess is they don't take this threat very seriously. So are they going to outlay big-time guaranteed money? Almost assuredly not. Could he get a new deal that involves a bunch of essential team options and a slight raise this year? Possibly, but that doesn't look like what he's looking for.
Do you think that Pittsburgh didn't think that L. Bell would really sit out the whole season? Do you think this plays out similar to the way
L. Bell was far more important? I think the threat of L. Bell was real, but let's not forget how everything played out last year. L. Bell didn't know he was going to sit out the whole season. So he started going week by week. Then he realized him and his agent sat down and talked because he had told, remember the offensive line, that was part of the conflict, that he was going to come back and report to the team. After conversing with his agent, they decided they were going to end up sitting out the whole season. So to me, this is not the same. I wouldn't look at Melvin Gordon in the same breath as L. Bell. L. Bell's ability to dominate as a running back. He was a special, special running back. When we had the conversation about who's the best running back in the league, L. Bell was always included. Melvin Gordon has never been talked about until we have the holdout situation.
And the other, to me, the biggest distinction is Le'Veon Bell was not holding out. Le'Veon Bell was not under contract. They couldn't find Le'Veon Bell. They couldn't take any money from him. He just was refusing to sign the franchise tag for the second straight year. Melvin Gordon's under contract. Melvin Gordon's in a position where if he were to skip all of the preseason and show up in week one, he'd be down nearly $2 million in fines. And for a guy that's only scheduled to make about $6 million this year, they can fine him regular season game checks.
Yeah, because it's his option year.
Yeah, it's a weird thing in the new CBA. You can be fined up to a regular season game check for each preseason game missed, only for guys in their fifth year option. So they kind of hold the hammer over him. In theory, if he were to sit out the whole year, he would owe them money. Now, I've never seen a player actually have to pay a team money, but unless they retire early, signing bonus money back. So he deserves more than he's being paid, and he deserves some financial security, but he has no real power over the Chargers, and sitting behind him is a guy named Austin Eckler, who in limited touches last year, about 100 carries, 5 yards per carry, so they might feel like they can get 80% of the production out of the backup, right, even if Melvin's not out there.
You mentioned Melvin Gordon last year didn't rush for 1,000 yards. Generally, 16 players rushed for 900 or more yards last season. So when you don't even have 1,000 yards rushing, he's had 1,000 yards one time in his career. Like, when you're not a 1,000-yard rusher, your contract is not expiring. You don't have the opportunity to be a free agent. So he doesn't hold the hammer.
He doesn't have the
like
leverage.
L. Bell. Right. He didn't have the stats. And L. Bell didn't get paid on his first contract because he wasn't a first rounder. Melvin Gordon got paid. So now on your second contract, you can't keep paying for potential. They're already giving you 4 years of what you can do,
yeah,
and they believe that potentially they can replace him with a couple guys. I don't believe they're going to invest long-term into Melvin Gordon.
And just real quick, the running back market, even though a few guys have gotten paid, there's only 3 running backs in the entire league making more than $8.5 million a year. Melvin Gordon's at 6, so it sounds low compared to any other position. But if you're not Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, or David Johnson, you are not making big-time NFL money playing the running back position. Zeke's trying to change that. A couple other guys are trying to change that. Melvin Gordon, if he wants to change it, almost assuredly has to play this year, play close to the full 16, play well, and then he either gets franchise tag, which will be around $10 million, or maybe a little bit less, or go out in free agency and get a contract.
Moving on, Lonzo Ball's time with the Lakers lasted just 2 disappointing seasons, but the former second overall pick is excited for a fresh start alongside new Pelicans teammate Zion Williamson. Nick, will Lonzo be a good fit with Zion in New Orleans?
I actually think he's a great fit because he's going to try to push the pace, get a rebound, push it up the court. You know Zion's going to be running the court. Also, defensively, I think these two guys can be 2/5 of a very good NBA defense. And we know that Lonzo's an underrated athlete. You see it in the highlights. His ability to get above the rim, but more importantly, his ability to throw lobs to Zion when he's trying to get above the rim. And he can do it a little more under the radar than he was able to do it in Los Angeles with his dad and all the distractions surrounding him there.
He should be a good fit. But one thing to watch for, Zion can't shoot. Lonzo can't shoot.
Yeah.
Their center can't shoot. They only got 2 shooters in the lineup. So they better play with pace before teams set up their half-court defense. Nick made some good points. As far as the defensive end, they should be athletic and be good on that end. But watch the spacing on the court because
Reddick's going to run himself ragged running off screens trying to get open for them.
I do know.
Oh, sorry.
Moving on to Chris Paul, when he was traded to the Thunder for Russell Westbrook last week, a lot of people thought CP3 would be quickly flipped to another team, but recent reports have OKC open to keeping Chris Paul. Nick, should the Thunder hold on to the 34-year-old?
Jenna, you know shooting is important. Is that what I interrupted? Is that what you were going to say? I think so. Oh, don't be upset with me, Chris.
Oh, no, I'm not upset with you. I'm looking at your hair on the thing. Man, you made a vast improvement. I wonder, how can you be so smart and not realize that?
What, that this is a vast improvement?
Yes.
Oh, okay. To answer your question, Jenna Wolf, get us back on track.
Thank you.
OKC is not going to keep Chris Paul. Like, they might keep him temporarily. They might wait until the entire league can trade for him once the players you – remember, the players you signed this offseason can't be traded till late December. So he could start the year on OKC. But OKC is not going to have this expensive of a roster to not be a contender, to not be a playoff team. So, no, he might start the year on OKC, but I would be flabbergasted if he ended the year on OKC.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely going to be out of OKC. They're going to give you enough draft picks, too, first round. Hey, yeah. Take Chris Paul, and we'll give you some. Do you want anything back? Nope.
We're good.
No, he's got to go. It doesn't fit their model. They're in a total rebuild.
All right, to the Warriors now. They've been title favorites for half a decade, but Kevin Durant is gone. Nobody's sure when Klay Thompson will bounce back from a torn ACL, and they're all moving into a new stadium next year, and that has many wondering if Golden State can make it back to the big stage. Steph Curry doesn't wonder. He says, quote, "We got championship DNA. We know that. We've got our core when Klay gets back. It's going to be an interesting year for sure all the way around. It's going to be challenging to really find that momentum early, but with the new arena, losing the finals, this summer's a different vibe. Keeps you locked in." Nick, are people sleeping on the Warriors as title contenders? Just last week, you made a top seven. Warriors were not in it. Yeah. We were all surprised.
Listen, the idea that the Warriors are going to find themselves outside of the playoffs, I reject that. I think Steph's too good. I think Kerr's too good of a coach. I think Klay will be back at some point. But they're not finals contenders. They're not title contenders. So, I mean, if you're sleeping on them, you can stay asleep. Like, that's they have a very limited ceiling. Chris is really keeps harping on what type of team are they going to be defensively. That's a real question. The fit with D'Angelo Russell, that's a real question. And who is Draymond Green? Is he the player we saw in moments in the postseason last year, or is he the player we saw the entirety of last regular season, which was a very good but no longer best in the league level defender while being a hindrance on your offense? And how much does that hinder the offense those first few months of the year when Klay isn't out there, and the whole year when KD's not out there, not even to mention the emotional side of Draymond, where Iggy's gone, Sean Livingston's gone, and Draymond's waiting for that next contract. So the Warriors will be a playoff team. They, I think, when Klay comes back, can be a dangerous first-round team. But this is not a championship team. When we talk about the litany of teams in the West that 1 through 6 are elite basketball teams, to me, the Warriors are not on that list.
And Steph is right to a certain degree. Steve Kerr, himself, Klay, who could be on the rack for at least half the season next year, and Draymond, who else has got championship DNA? Looney, you're going to say just because he was out there on the court? No, to me, so that's the only people they have.
Right.
Like those backups and everything, they were afraid to play them. When they start getting those injuries, man, Steve Kerr wasn't like, oh, let me open up my bench. We, you know, this is what we do. We develop players. No, they haven't drafted well. They've developed any more players since Draymond got drafted, Steph got drafted, and Klay. Who else have they developed as a player? They have not, and it will hurt them this season. They're not a championship team. I think Steph, did he mention that new arena twice in there?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's the best. I mean, he's the best face of a
person.
Oh, absolutely. Did I mention we got a new stadium?
A new arena.
Did I mention that?
From Oakland to San Francisco.
Oh, it's going to be a different vibe and everything. Oh, he's doing what he's got to do. But championship, no.
And how do guys who have been competing for championships for the last 5 years, a team that went to more consecutive finals than any organization has since Russell Celtics, how do they respond when you are into February and March and it's very clear this isn't a championship-level team? Like, that is the other element of it. We've talked about the Warriors having a second gear, the Warriors amping up for the postseason. Well, when you've had 5 straight 100-game seasons,
right,
whether you're a championship-level team or not this year, the wear and tear is still on you for Draymond, for Steph. Klay's going to be out at the beginning. How does Draymond get himself as amped up as he needs to be when the games feel less meaningful this year than they have at any time since he's been a full-time starter with the whole specter of free agency? And are the Warriors even going to offer me a max contract hanging over him?
There's no sense of confidence that D'Angelo will be able to keep, you know, sort of keep everything in play until Klay gets back. Then it's just Klay and Steph and how powerful that duo is and how far they can take this team.
Where D'Angelo Russell going to go then? He's making $27 million. You want him to play this big role? And then as soon as Klay, where are you going to put him on the court? Like, what are they going to do defensively? They're an awful small team. And remember when KD got hurt, we gave the ball more to Draymond offensively? You bring in another guard now who is in the pick and roll and handles the ball all the time. So how does Draymond get into the offensive flow? No, this is not a good fit. It's a good fit when Klay's hurt, but they are not a good three-guard rotation there, no.
That arena that Steph brought up a couple times, I believe, is the biggest reason or one of the biggest reasons that they acquired D'Angelo Russell the way they did. We saw this team briefly, but we saw this team in the playoffs with no KD and no Klay. And the way teams guarded Steph made his life impossible. They couldn't go into a season saying, Steph, run around like it's Davidson, except with NBA-level defenders instead of mid-major-level defenders. So they had to bring in another option, and they had to keep things interesting because they're opening Chase Center.
Yep.
The Warriors could, as soon as the season after this, once again be championship favorites. We'll see what they do with Draymond, see what they trade D'Angelo for, have Steph and Klay for a full season. It might just be 1 year they're down. But this is going
to
be a
doubt. I doubt there'll be favorites that the
final. Well, I'm just saying I'm not going to cross.
You're very, very hopeful.
Okay, but the point is that this year there's no championship level this team can get to.
Nobody happier about that than Daryl Morey.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the Rockets now. They've made the last couple of years all about beating the Warriors. They made the blockbuster trade of the offseason, swapping out Chris Paul for a younger superstar in Russell Westbrook. And with Westbrook and James Harden reuniting in Houston, two ball-dominant guys who both play the same position, what could possibly go wrong? Well, Charles Barkley can answer that, saying, the only way this works is if Russ gives up his point guard duties to Harden. So, CeCe, which player do you think is going to have to adjust their game more? How does this all play out?
The way for this to work is both players have to adjust. You can't depend on one player to adjust. But it has a lot to do with the skill level, the intellect, who can make the adjustments. Before you say, oh, okay, who's the better player? When we drafted Randy Moss, immediately I had to make some adjustments. Not only did I have to give up my Z receiver, which is the flanker, to the tight end side, off the ball, goes in motion a lot. I had to give that up to Randy because he was more fit to be a Z, and it was easier for him to learn the offense from that position. So was it natural for me to give it up? Yes. Was it better for Randy for me to be able to give it up? Yes. But did Randy have the ability to do anything else? No, not initially coming in. So when you look at Harden and you look at Russ, what's their skill set? James Harden built a score to basketball at a level that we haven't seen since Wilt Chamberlain. Now, do I want to jeopardize that with Russ? Because Russ is not good playing off the ball. So I can't just make Russ play the two guard when his skill set is everything but a two guard. The shooting guard, Russ is not a good shooter. So, no, you have to be able to mix it up. You also have to be able to play at some type of pace where you don't have to set it up and Russ can take it either off the rebound, him or Harden, because both of them are very good rebounding guards, and before the defense is able to get up, set up. But this is a huge compromise for both the players. It's like a marriage. Sometime someone else is going to have to compromise a little more than the other. 50-50 doesn't mean equal, but both of these players have to look at their game. They talked to each other and said that they wanted this. Now let's see what they do to accommodate the other player.
Right. They both have to make the adjustments. Here's the hardest part for Mike D'Antoni and for the Rockets. And I think this was a smart trade. I think you can upgrade from Chris Paul to Russ. Player 4 years younger, you make that move when you're within Harden's championship window. But the complicating factor is this. Of the two players, the guy who can threaten a defense more without the ball in his hands is James Harden. So that you would actually be saying, Russ, keep the ball in your hands, not as much as he did in OKC, but more so than Chris Paul had it, because you still have to guard Harden if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, because he's such a threat to shoot. But Russ is obviously not as efficient as James Harden when James Harden has the ball in his hands. So what both these players must do is become better without the basketball. It's something, James, that I think frustrated Chris Paul last year.
Neither one of them are great as far as movement without the ball.
Correct.
Going on the baseline, relocating, taking a guy down, running him off a back screen. They haven't done a bunch of it, but their skill set at that is not as high as the other things they do offensively.
And the last few years, the way each of them, I believe, had justified it internally is, when I have the ball in my hand, which is so much of the time, I'm doing so much work. When I don't have the ball, that's my time to rest on the court. Well, this year, for both of them, they're going to have less workload as far as ball in their hand. So Russ is going to have to be hard cutting to the basket, back screening, what Chris is talking about. And James is going to have to be relocating for shots. If they do that, this can work. One of the things this helps the Rockets with is, last year, what did we keep hearing Shaq and Chuck say on Inside the NBA and all about the Houston? Late in playoff games, when you just need a basket, they're still just shooting threes. When you just need some type of high percentage shot, they didn't have anyone other than Harden who could get to the rim. Russ can still get to the rim at an elite level. Russ, I think, should help them late in games as far as, we don't need a three. What we need is the best basket we can find. But that it's going to take 46 minutes of them working together to get to that point.
Two problems late in games. Russ is not very good from the free throw line. Teams, will he go to the bucket knowing that he can get fouled? We've seen that with other players, that they tend to stay away from the bucket. And F. Russ, when he's on the point, Harden, as good of a shooter he is, he's not a good spot-up shooter. He almost dribbles the ball at least one time for every – so you don't need that as a two-guard. So his skill set, even though it's good, he likes to dribble the basketball before he shoots it. So it's going to be something that's going to evolve as the season goes on, because this is not a natural fit for either one of these guards.
So that's my question. How long does D'Antoni give this trying to make it work before he just says, okay, Harden, go do what you did for that 30-game stretch last year. We need wins heading into the playoffs.
That won't work. Assuming they're not as injured as they were last year, they're not going to need Harden to be a one-man show for as long of a stretch as they did last season. But you are not going to be able to marginalize Russ the way you did Chris Paul, which is why it does take both of these guys saying, having a come-to-Jesus moment together of, man, we've both done everything in this league we ever could have imagined, except for win a title. And in fact, the last time either one of us were even in the finals was 7 years ago when we played together as kids in Oklahoma City. So figuring out the push and the pull there. We saw Russ, by the way, go from 24 shots per game the year before they got Paul George down to 20. Now, 20 is still the fourth most in basketball. But last year, Paul George actually took more shots per game than Russell Westbrook. It probably surprised people, but he did. Like, can both of those guys take 17 to 18 shots per game instead of both of – Harden last year took 24 himself. Like, he led the league in that category. Can they both take a slightly lesser role? Because the other factor here is Eric Gordon didn't have a great relationship with Chris Paul, and I'm sure he's one of the people glad Chris Paul's gone. But Eric Gordon's also got to be thinking, like, man, how many plays a game is going to be run for me? One? Two, like, you've got to make sure Eric Gordon, who is a very important third piece of this team, feels involved as well. So that, listen,
this is a difficult adjustment for him. It's all. Everything's going to work out. I called her and everything. We're living together. We get married. Then your favorite workout outfit gets bleached, Jenna, when they wash the clothes, and you're like, you know something, man? I was better off by myself. Okay, dude, averaged 36 points last year. Didn't need no type of help. So there's going to be some times, like you said. Oh, I can do this by myself, regardless of, I called him this offseason, said I wanted to play with him. Yeah, bleach my outfit and see what happens.
You and Danielle discuss bleaching your outfit. Is that one of the big fights household?
No. Nick doesn't do laundry.
You
Nick,
bleach Nick, my Nick, workout no, outfits.
I don't have a workout outfit, and I don't do laundry.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here, first things first, we are joined by FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Chris, it's been a while.
Oh, man, good to
be
back.
Love having you back.
Welcome
here.
Back, man.
It's good to be back.
I mean, a lot's changed since you've been back.
A lot's changed. It's nice to be
taller,
around some friendly
Didn't
faces.
Get taller?
Didn't it?
Well, the hair, you
can
know,
you
that,
verify,
that gives
you can you
inches.
Verify, though? It is not
is
hair plugs, and it's real.
It is definitely real. It's sharp, man.
He's
I'm
not.
Serious.
That's good.
But the hair is.
You know it's what? Sharp. I don't know if you like it. I don't think he likes it.
I'm a little
but
uncomfortable
it looks real
with
good.
It. But I just, real quick, before we get to the actual sports.
You do
you know
nothing
what I love
real
about
quick.
Chris Carter? The only reason people thought it was hair plugs is because he said for 2 months on television it was hair plugs. And now he's like, hey, Chris Broussard.
I also told the people you were married to my sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is another
They
one,
thought,
right?
Well, I mean, us.
Nothing gets uncomfortable.
My sister, us sister.
Hey, yeah.
Him too.
Broussard, let's talk some basketball. Things
Please.
Are getting
Thank
weird. We haven't heard much from Giannis this offseason. That after getting bounced in the conference finals of the last season. The Greek Freak coming off his first MVP after carrying his Bucks team to a 60-win season. Isn't that enough? Asks everyone. Hardly, says Giannis. The 24-year-old believes this is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg, saying, quote, I think I'm at 60% of my potential. So, Broussard, is there pressure on Giannis to get even better after his MVP season to fill in that 40%?
No question. And if he's right about 60%, then it's
good night, everybody.
It's going to be scary. But, yeah, there's pressure on him for a few reasons. One, when you win the MVP, you put yourself in that group of players that has to win a championship now. Everybody doesn't, but when you don't follow up an MVP eventually with a title, then people begin to look down on you. Like, we've heard Damian Lillard talk about, I want to stay where I'm at. Well, as great as Lillard is, there's not that pressure on Lillard where he's got to have a ring. LeBron, at a point, had to have a ring. Kevin Durant had to have a ring. And so you saw what they did to get their rings. So Giannis has to get a ring. Number two, he was exposed in the Eastern Conference Finals by Kawhi without his jumper. We knew he couldn't shoot the jumper, but nobody had really been able to stop him from getting to the rim and doing the things he normally did to offset his lack of a jump shot. So he's got to improve that. And then thirdly, what does every other star on his level have?
What?
A second guy.
Oh.
LeBron, Anthony Davis, Steph, Harden now, Kevin Durant. They all have that second star. He doesn't. He's got Chris Middleton, who's a really good player, will make some all-star teams, largely because they're winning. But he doesn't have that second star on the level that the other guys do. So there is the pressure for him to keep improving. No doubt about it.
I don't think people have the expectations, too, because I remember LeBron, and I'm not going to compare what Kawhi did to him, what happened to LeBron against Dallas. Okay. But
the Spurs,
when they came back. Sorry. No, the Spurs, because it was in Cleveland. Like, with the Spurs, I wasn't too much concerned about that. But the pressure and the comparison, to me, because it was like, with LeBron, what's next? Like, what's next in this game? And Giannis, it should be. Well, what's next? I don't believe there's no all-NBA player that's only playing 60% of what they can play. Can Giannis improve? Will he ever be a 40% three-point shooter? All those things? Probably not. But going against Kawhi and being the MVP of the league, he should have fared better than that. Kawhi exposed him. They weren't double teaming him. It was mono on mono. And he realizes that not only does he have to keep improving his three-pointer, but he's got to improve his mid-range game. So to me, all great players, it's a matter of what's next. And you make a great point as far as he doesn't have that other star, but he's got a collection of talent and a system that he should thrive in. I love Giannis's game. I love the fact, too, that he's not ducking. I need to get better, yep. Even though a lot of people consider me to be great.
And here's why I'm so bullish on Giannis. One is the age. He's 24. Just for some context, Chris Stapps, who we think's young, going to be great one day, he turns 24 in a month. Karl Anthony Towns turns 24 in a couple months. Kuzma turns 24 next week. Embiid's 25. Like, guys that we think, okay, one day they'll reach their full... Giannis is their age, and he's already been league MVP. He's already been up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals before Kawhi put that claw on him and the thing went sideways. He's also, every single year of his career, his field goal percentage has gone up. His points per game have gone up. His rebounding per game has gone up. And the reason that's so impressive is not just the continual improvement, but this year he got better in everything despite playing 5 less minutes per game. He was playing 37 minutes a game last year. The season before this was 32 and a half this year under Coach Bud. So fewer minutes, more production. Now for Giannis, it's always going to be about the shooting because he can do everything else. He could have won Defensive Player of the Year. He did win MVP. He was 26% on open threes. So if he can just shoot one out of three, a legitimate percentage on open threes, then guys have to come out closer to him, and then he can continue to ruin people at the rim. That's the biggest part of his game that seems the most obvious because his passing is elite for his size. His scoring's obviously elite. His defense is good as anybody in the NBA. It's the perimeter shooting, and if he takes that next step, the Bucks won't need that second star.
Clearly, the shooting then is where you'd fill in that 40%. But when you look at the greatest players that we've been following in the last 10 years, do you put him in that echelon? Is he on pace within the Kevin Durant's, the LeBron James at this age to be this good? Or were those guys a little more completed and polished at this age?
Well, Durant has kind of always been complete. You know, his offensive arsenal is just awesome. What he needed was, you know, kind of an offensive system that better fit him and helped him to win championships. And maybe, you know, mentally he needed to get over some things too because, let's face it, they should have beat Golden State in 2016 and they couldn't do it. LeBron obviously needed to work on his jump shot and you know. So Giannis, I like what you said about Giannis with the mid-range. He's never going to be a tremendous three-point shooter, but if his mid-range, if against Toronto he had a mid-range game, that would have changed everything. Here's the other thing. In 2021, he could be a free agent, so 2 years from now. Will he get to a point? I remember interviewing LeBron in his fourth year, and LeBron was saying, you know, I'm not going to be a ring chaser. And I'm not saying he's a ring chaser, but he got to a point where he knew he needed to win rings. He's like, I don't feel like I'll have to be a ring chaser and so on and so forth. Kevin Durant criticized LeBron, I believe, on Twitter when LeBron went to Miami. Oh, so we not competing or something to that effect. Like I said, the pressure begins to mount year after year when you're on that level. So Giannis, who right now is talking about staying in Milwaukee, being on the coaching staff and the front office when he's done playing, if he doesn't win it in 2 years or at the least bit get to the finals,
but it's not
that's
even
when
2 years.
He may begin looking at leaving.
Broussard, to me, it's this year. Because what will happen is this year, after this season, they can offer him that 5-year $250 million contract. And if he turns that down, then Milwaukee, the story next offseason will be, are they going to trade him? There is no franchise tag in the NBA. You can't let a player like this walk out the door for nothing. So that is where there is immense pressure. I think it's one of the reasons why they paid a premium to bring back Middleton, paid a premium to bring back Brook Lopez after already re-signing Eric Bledsoe early. They know they have to make the NBA Finals this year. If they win a championship, then obviously you don't have to worry about it. But at the very least, they have to get a step further because if they offer him next offseason, when they can, the 5 years, 246, and he turns it down, then Milwaukee has to immediately start to consider, what type of trade package can we get for this player? So it, to me, it's not a two-year window. It's 1 year, and the pressure on Giannis, because everything up to this point in his career, Chris, has been good headlines. MVP, I mean, we didn't even kill him that much for the way they ended their season. Next year, no matter what he does in the regular season, people are going to say, doesn't matter, show it to me in the playoffs. And it will be about, can he get past Philly and whomever else is the contenders out east to get to the NBA Finals?
I love Giannis's attitude. I hope he just keeps working on his game. I hope he doesn't get consumed like people covering the game with the three-pointer, because he's never going to be a great three-point shooter. Never. Never. He's never going to be a great three-point shooter. But if he can sharpen up that intermediate game, he can be unstoppable. Forget about where he's going to play. If I'm Giannis, I'm trying to get to unstoppable. And then when you get to a series, like against Kawhi, they have no defense for that, because the game slows down. There's more physical contact in the playoffs. And when that happened, he didn't thrive. So I don't care where I'm going in the future. If I get that mid-range game, I'm going to terrorize the other 29 teams in the league.
Back here with Chris Broussard, we're talking Lakers. When Anthony Davis was officially introduced on Saturday, people thought the toughest decision moving forward was going to be deciding which jersey number to wear. But a new concern might be brewing, where to play the six-time All-Star. Listed as a center, AD might have a different preference in Los Angeles.
I like playing the four. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. I like playing the four. I don't really like playing the five. But if it comes down to it, Coach, and you need me to play the five, then I'll play the five. But like I said, it's the game has become so positionless that, you know, you can put five guys on the floor and then they just play. You know, obviously you guys seen the thing that came out about LJ running a point. Super tall, it's a super tall point guard. So you never, it really doesn't matter. You know, just put five guys out there that fits best with each other and go out there and win.
I love it. It's positionless, and it really doesn't matter. That being said, I'm not playing the five.
Right.
Just I want to make sure everybody knows that. Broussard, would it be a mistake not to play AD at the center position?
Yes, of course. I mean, he's going to have to play some center. Now, it's nice to have Boogie Cousins there to face Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid and, you know, some of these bigger lumbering centers that are on the block. And that's what AD really doesn't want to do. But he hit it on the head. Look, a lot of times it's going to be essentially positionless. And against many teams, if not most, he can and should play center. Houston with Capella, he can play center. Golden State when they go small. Or even if they have Willie Cauley-Stein or whoever in center. He can play center. Yeah, so it will be, one, to match up with what the opponent does, but two, because it's an advantage for the Lakers. He's a seven-footer, so if they go small, you still have a seven-footer who can protect the rim, who can also be your center. And I think it's possible, if LeBron is at point, that their starting lineup could be LeBron James, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, and Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Which would put Davis at the center. That's the lineup Magic mentioned as the finishing lineup.
That's their best lineup. But I've been told repeatedly, because that's the exact lineup that I presented as well, and it was right before Magic put it out there, that's not how they're going to start games because of this. Because Anthony Davis does not want to be listed as the center, does not want to start games as the center. Now, I agree with you. In today's NBA, the reason he's so devastating when he plays center is you have no good options defending him.
Right.
If you put someone that, because he is so good on the perimeter, these highlights are him facing up 15 feet from the basket, big men can't guard him out there. So if you put someone on him that can guard him out there, he's going to be 5 inches taller than them, and then he can go down on the block and kill him. But that's not how he wants to play the majority of his minutes. It is, to me, the best Lakers lineup. And the other problem they run into is this. If they start a center, LeBron will start, obviously. Anthony Davis will start. Center X will start.
Probably Boogie Cousins.
So call it Boogie. And then Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma would be your next two best guys. Who guards point guards? Danny Green, when he's your best wing defender, all of a sudden you start having real questions about what the lineup will look like. I think Magic was correct. That will be the closing lineup, with Avery Bradley being the only question mark, depending on his health.
He can guard the point guards.
Well, that's absolutely, which is why that could be your starting lineup. but not if you also have to start a center. And the other thing that starting a center is going to mean is less minutes where LeBron is on the court surrounded by shooters. LeBron's going to start Anthony Davis in a center. Now there's only two spots available for shooters. Danny Green will be one of them, but Kuzma was a shooter his rookie year, not at all his second year. So that's where Frank Vogel's job immediately gets more difficult than it has to be, because this is just, I don't know if it's emotionally, physically, whatever it is, it's not what Anthony Davis wants to do.
He doesn't want to log those minutes defensively. It's not on the offensive end, it's on the defensive end. He doesn't want to guard another big center, especially if traditional, they're going to be in the low post, 15 to 20 minutes a game. And he doesn't want to be stereotyped as a center. Anthony Davis grew up in Chicago. He was a guard.
Point guard.
All right. He had a growth spurt, but he was a guard. Yeah. And we have seen players for a number of different reasons, either by height. I remember the kid, Kevin Garnett. Man, how tall are you?
6'11".
Man, you're 7 feet.
6'13".
No, 6'13".
Yeah.
They came up with that.
Why?
Kevin Durant. How tall are you?
6'11".
Why? I don't know
well,
the
for
reason.
For both those guys, it was because Garnett said, I don't want to be called a center. And if you call me 7 feet, I got to play center.
Tim Duncan wasn't a center, technically. But he played like a center.
Right. So to me, I'm not concerned about it. I think Anthony Davis did the right thing. Bill Parcells said the number one way to get your coach's attention is do what he asked you to do. And he did defer to the coach and right. said, if the coach asked me to play that. But we've seen this. LeBron should have been a power forward long time ago. I want him to play in the post long time ago. He wouldn't. Why? Because he doesn't want to. But when he's forced to in certain games, you've seen it come out in him. I think the Lakers will be fine. You have to be able to find some shooters. Anthony Davis, when you are that type of player, and he's gone on record, this is not new to me. When they traded for him, I said, don't put him at center. He's always said he doesn't want to play center. And now we'll see how it plays out. I don't think it's going to affect their season.
What is the negative stereotype around playing center? Is it all the workload? Is it all you don't want to go up against defending bigs? Like, why do guys not want to play
stereotype,
center?
It's just viewed as, you know, you're a big, cumbersome player who doesn't have all these
doesn't
skills.
Have the other skills.
But he's got to get over that, because the lineup you mentioned, if Boogie's in there, and I know Boogie stretches the floor and can shoot the three, but I like Boogie better on the block. I don't really want to see him out at the three-point line taking five or six a game. So if you have Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, and LeBron,
court becomes
small. I mean, if LeBron's just playing point guard, it may not be as important for him to have that open lane. But if he's playing his typical point forward, then he's going to want that lane open to penetrate and do what he does. And with that lineup, it's going to be tough.
And it is assuming that Boogie is going to be some semblance of the guy we saw at the end of the regular season and not the guy we saw post-quad injury. Now, I know he's going to be better than he was in the finals where he fought his way onto the court. And, my God, it looks like he's lost 30 pounds. I mean, he looks as thin as we've ever seen him, to his credit. But if he suffers another injury, which now has to be on the board, then when you're talking about starting centers, you're back to JaVale McGee, who I know is coming off his best year, but he shouldn't be in the top seven of your rotation if you're trying to win a title, unless you have three superstars and no team has three superstars anymore. So it does complicate things enormously. I think the biggest upside of LeBron playing point, even if it's just in name only, is that it means Rondo doesn't start, because that's another player that would constrict the court. The biggest upside to Anthony Davis playing center is it would mean between LeBron at the point and Anthony Davis at the center, you could get three people out there that are threats from the three-point line.
Right.
That's not how they're going to start the games. And your starting lineup, while it doesn't have to be your closing lineup, it will be the lineup that plays the most minutes over the course of the season. So it does matter, and we'll see how the Lakers can juggle it.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.